Life's like that, isn't it? Only the other day I was walking in the West End and suddenly I was set upon by hordes of fans and admirers who wanted to touch my clothes. So I took sanctuary in a nearby cinema. Normally, of course, I don't go in, but that day I saw something that really moved me. I'd like to share this wonderful experience with you. It was The Sound of Music.
You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, London's premier radio art station.
Well, look at this! Here's a guy here just in the nick of time. What does that make us?
Big damn heroes, sir.
Ain't we just?
Jesus Christ! That includes blasphemy as well. Now tell me, John, how can you be concentrating on improving this lovely tan, and it is a lovely tan, by the way, when you've got more pressing priorities at hand?
Tell Harry.
Listen, I don't like it when some tough nut comes pushing his way in and out of my house in the middle of the night. Bloody well tell me who sent you.
You're a big man, but you're in bad shape. With me, it's a full-time job. Now behave yourself.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM, the film and TV radio show where a handful of film enthusiasts shoot the breeze about all things film and television. I'm Marcus Iacco. Merry New Year! Merry New Year! Points for anybody who can get what that reference is. I've been saying it constantly. Nobody has checked me on it. I know one person that knows it. Ella, yo, Merry New Year. Give me a reference if you know what a reference is. Send us a message on Facebook, Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. Anyway, Merry New Year, everybody. Producer Dave?
Yeah, okay.
Are you busy? You
yes,
want to say
I
hi,
am.
My name
I'm,
is... You don't want to do the introduction? Yeah. You've forgotten? It's been so long since you've done this live. You're like...
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Fine.
Happy New Year.
I didn't ask you one of the random questions that we do, how we normally start the session. You know, like throw it at you. Like, what's the first TV show? The latest TV show that I've watched in 2020 is Doom Patrol. What about
you? Have you been watching Doom Patrol?
I have. But introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm David Campbell. As I've been reminded, it's David, not Dave.
Yes, twice. What TV show? What was the last TV show that you watched, or the latest TV show that you've watched in 2020?
Gosh, that's a hard one because I haven't been watching that much on TV, to be quite honest.
Okay.
I've been catching up with loads of movies. So,
okay, what was the last movie you watched?
Last movie I've watched was. Well, in actual fact, a movie that I'm going to mention that I have watched is Blue Story, because that was on...
We'll come to that. I have questions I need to ask. Anyway, we're not alone in the studio. Please tell us your name. You're the director of the film 24 Hours in London. Tell us your name and the last TV show or movie that you watched in 2020. Last or first, the latest movie you've watched.
Firstly, can I say Marcus and David? Happy 2020, and to all the listeners out there, a happy new year to you too. My name's Paul Knight, and the last TV show I'm currently almost the last two episodes of is a programme called Dollface.
Dollface.
Ah, see? That actually features a woman with a cat head that looks better than everything in cats.
Oh, nice.
But that's a different thing altogether.
Have you seen Cats?
I saw the trailer, that was
enough. Yeah, I know, yeah. And the trailer did exactly what it was supposed to do. It told the audience what to expect when you go to go see it. The problem is, it was horrible, right? I mean, come on. Those of you can't see what was happening, but producer David is looking at me. He's throwing a face because I said that Cats was horrible. I'm sorry. It looks horrible.
Sorry.
Was that your look
at
your face?
Do you remember when you went through a list of films that were coming out later on in the year and you said Cats? And I said, no, pass.
Okay, yes, I do remember
you
that.
You do remember that.
Yeah, but the fact that I said horrible, like
I was just actually trying to hide a smile because I've seen so many criticisms of
I
it.
I know.
And James Corden came in for some particular reason. So, you know, that's why I'm smiling.
Can I just highlight, as a trivia point. The actual editing on the film was finished the same day it was premiering. So they actually uploaded it. So the people that actually watched the premiere got the same feeling that if they could have just streamed it on a streaming platform like Amazon or Netflix or even BritBox. And on that very night. So what they actually watched wasn't 35 mil all the rest of it. It was a direct download.
And I heard there were a couple of scenes. There's one person in particular who didn't actually have all the CGI done, and you could see actual hands rather than paws or whatever. There's like various patchwork of CGI for various characters in it, right? So it wasn't complete.
No, but then obviously if you read the news reports, yeah. It said after it had already been out a week and it was already tanking... Yeah. Universal put out a statement saying, well, we're re-releasing it with new improved CGI.
So they saw the model the Avengers Endgame did, where they crossed the billion mark, right? Where basically they released
billion?
At that point, right, they'd already gotten to, they were close to Avatar. They were like right behind Avatar. And then they re-released it with like 6 minutes worth of added footage.
Yeah, was right at the end on the end credits.
Yes, yeah. Which was the start of Spider-Man Far From Home, right? Yeah. They added that a little bit. So cats were like, yeah, that's a good model. We'll do that. Okay, excellent. I guess Kanye West did the same thing with his album, right? So he released the first album.
Let's not go there. Well, yeah,
it's the new trend. It's just release something that is just not complete, right? Put it out there. People will go and pay full price for it. And then you say, right, we're going to add some extra things to it, extra editing, put a new actor in to play that part instead of like a puppet that you've put in there. And then you go and pay full price to watch it again, right? So it's a marketing ploy. Let's see if it catches fire in 2020.
It's the new 3D.
Yes. Dave, you were talking about Blue Story. Tell us about Blue Story.
Blue Story is, well, a lot of people have been talking about it. It caused a lot of controversy as well. But Blue Story, in its essence, is about two friends and how a friendship, which looks so tight, can go so badly wrong, basically.
And the controversy was the fact that there was a sort of not a riot, but like a fight that broke out in a Birmingham cinema.
It's got an anti-gang message.
Yeah.
And I think a couple of rival gangs went to see it at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that's where the fighting came along.
Sure.
And that's it, basically.
And that has, I mean, as you said, the theme of the movie is anti-gang violence and whatnot. So it has it's not promoting gang violence. It's actually the opposite form.
Yeah. I mean, it shows a mother who's lost two sons, two different ways, and two friends who are very, 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 very tight. And I'm talking about very tight, who through various different reasons just become on opposite sides of the friends.
Yeah.
And not only because they're different postcards, just for various reasons. You need to go and see the film to actually get all the reasons for it. For me, I was watching it with interest because everywhere was shot around places where I either grew up or I worked, so I knew them intimately and I could actually look at the building and say, that is that, that is that. And even the cinema that I went to see in Peckham, you know, Peckhamplex,
yeah.
They used this part of the scenery as well, so I was able to, you know, if you're sort of like one of those local lads, you'd be able to see everything that you know. So,
you see, yeah. It came out when I was out of the country, and I wanted to go see it. By the time I came back, it wasn't showing in the cinemas near me. I had to hunt it down. I still haven't seen it yet, but I'm going to track it down. I'm going to watch it as soon as I can, because I've heard good things about it, so I want to check it out. Anyway,
it's a BBC film, so it's going to be on the BBC at some point.
Fair enough.
And I will say that. The two main leads, really good, but one of them is brand new to the game, and he did a really good job for his first time as well.
I won't wait for it to come out on BBC because by that point there are going to be tons of other things that I want to watch, and it'll probably just, you know,
I'm saying that for people who sort of like won't go and see it. If you see it, they'll eventually get a chance to see it.
Sure, but that's Blue Story. We're here. Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acker.
I'm David Campbell.
And we're here with the producer, writer, director of the film 24 Hours in London, Paul Knight. We'll talk about it a little bit more when we do the spotlight session. You're here with us for the whole hour, right?
I certainly am.
Excellent. Don't go running away.
So I'm quite happy to talk about Blue Story as much as you like.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You've got some take on that.
Forget the other project. Yeah. We'll just talk about Blue Story, which is not yours.
It's a great someone else's film.
We'll do that. We'll also do our top five favorites, which today is top five favorite films set in 24 hours. Send us your top fives. Jimmy Noble has sent us his. We'll talk about that when we get to that segment. But before any of that stuff, let's do film and TV news. All right, so before we talk to Paul Knight about his film, let's talk about news that happened recently. BAFTA nominations came out. Now, there was a lot of controversy about a whole bunch of stuff to do with BAFTA, but I kind of want to spend more time with Paul talking about his projects. So we might touch on it if you want to, Paul, depending on how you feel.
I do have an opinion. No,
okay, sure. Producer David, you have your opinion as well about stuff that happened with BAFTA?
I'm going to defer to our guests.
Okay. But before that, we'll just focus on just one category of the BAFTA nominations, which is Best Film. Paul, I know you've been mad busy over the last few months with the project that you're working on. Have you had any time to go and see any of these films?
I've seen quite a few, okay. But I don't know if they're BAFTAs. It's more what's up for Oscars. I'm assuming they're the same films.
These ones will reoccur with the Oscars as well. So we'll go through the list of what have been nominated for Best Film. That's the only category we'll focus on today. Tell me which ones you've seen and tell me what you think.
Okay.
The Irishman.
I have seen The Irishman.
Yes. What did you think?
I didn't get why no one could handle the 3.5 hours. I sat for it twice.
It's a
brilliant film, and I didn't feel bored, didn't need to get up and keep going, didn't need to check my phone. I've watched it twice. It is Scorsese, and it's a great cast. So.
I agree with you on all of those counts. The one thing I had an issue with, I understand, I mean, the whole de-age, because there's one of the main draws of the film is the whole de-aging process.
See, I didn't see that. I think a good makeup artist would have got the same result as opposed to all an extra 70 million of CGI.
And I agree with that.
17 million.
Something like that.
I agree with that. Here's why I agree with that. Because the fact that they used the de-aging technology, they didn't use the one that Marvel uses, right?
No.
Marvel's one is almost perfect. If they had used that, it would have been a lot better. The fact that they didn't, it was sort of a low-grade version of the Marvel tech that they used. There were still issues. So just as you're saying, if they just use makeup and prosthetics just to make it, you can buy that better, right?
Yeah.
Because it looks real. The fact that it wasn't all there kind of made me think something's off, right? And they just did it with his face. The rest of his body posture was
so
pretty much
the hands, like when they're doing the truck.
Yeah.
Both of them, they didn't de-age their hands.
Yeah.
And of course, when he beats, well, if no one's seen him, that one's, but no, he beats someone up.
Yeah.
But he moves like an old man.
Yes, when he's walking, when he's moving, his body posture, his size and shape and everything, still an old man, right? But he's supposed to be. So I didn't know how old he was. It's like, because, you know, your brain takes in bits that you don't really think about. It's like that whole joke, so like, you may not have seen it, but your brain did.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. I could see his face was supposed to be young. When he was, like, at the very beginning, was he supposed to be in his 20s or something?
He was meant to, because he'd just come out of the war.
Yeah.
But if you, on my way up here, I made the mistake of catching the Northern Line. So I was stuck at a certain station, but I watched a YouTube video of did the deep fake.
Yes.
And it looked 100 times better than
exactly.
The film.
And so I agree with you. Makeup and prosthetics would have been better. That was, for me, the only thing I found wrong with The Irishman. Everything else, you're absolutely right. The script, the acting was very natural as well, which is the way they did it. It's like you could tell that these guys were just, they've lived and breathed it. And there's one scene in particular. It's one of the scenes that pretty much nobody really talks about because there are tons of others you could pick out, but it's one of the Robert De Niro scenes, and I'm not spoiling anything. It's when he's been given a command, or not necessarily a command, a decision has been made about a certain person, and there's a bit where the camera just focuses on him internalizing what has happened, what needs to happen, and you see like him go through a whole bunch of emotions internally. But it's all expressed in his face just by him just sitting there and just staring. And I'm like, that's the reason why he was considered at one point one of the greatest actors of his generation.
And the same principle is in Goodfellas, when obviously you see him in the bar and he makes the decision,
yes,
I'm going to take out the rest of the crew, yes, and keep all the money. So
absolutely correct.
It's the same sort of thing. It's just that term of the cigarette,
mm-hmm,
and it just summed it all up in that. In it.
All of that is just on one film that we've mentioned,
sorry,
which is
sorry,
The Irishman.
Let's move along.
Yes, moving along. The next one is 1917.
I have not seen this. I'm not that, you know, I'm not bothered by the film. Mm-hmm. However, I do want to see how Roger Deakins made that look like one continuous
take.
Shot.
I agree with you.
That's
yeah.
the only thing I'm more interested in. It's not, no offense to the actors, the story, yeah. Sam Mendes. It's just not, war films ain't my bag. But I do appreciate that cinematography.
Yes,
like,
and for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, 1917 is a film, it's a Sam Mendes film set in the First World War. The story is two infantry soldiers are sent on a mission to go from their safe zone to go behind enemy lines in order to cut across to tell another group of British soldiers that their plan is basically is failing, and they should turn around, otherwise they'll get massacred.
Yeah.
And the entire film is shot to look as if it's done in one take where there are no real edits. Obviously, there are edits because there are explosions and people running around and whatnot, and you're following these two lesser known actors, right? You have Colin Firth in it. I think Benedict Cumberbatch might be in it as well, yeah, and whatnot, and so on. But yeah, so cinematically, it's going to be an amazing film to watch. I want to see it for the exact reason. Okay, next one, Joker.
Yes, I've seen Joker.
What did you think?
I thought that was a very good film, but it was disturbing to watch.
Okay.
What Phoenix does, mm-hmm, with his body, it's one of those films I'm only ever going to watch once. As great as it is,
yep,
but he took me on the journey. It was very unnerving in a way, you know, his body, the way he lost and the way he moved. And it's great, but the next time I watch it, it's just going to be, I'm going to watch it with a different,
sure,
thing. So it was one of those, for me, it was one of those films I'm only going to watch once, but I'm very glad I watched it the, okay, once.
I think my thoughts on the movie have already been made. I'm going to move on because I definitely want to come back to you on your own film. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes, seen that.
Okay,
got it on
think?
Blu-ray. it's your typical Tarantino. Mm-hmm. I think they overindulge him a bit too much.
Sure. Well, he wrote, produced, directed the film.
Well,
it's
just that they give him a blank check, and it's like he makes a three-hour film when you look at it and you think, well, that could have been 2 hours, mate. You know what I mean?
Plus, the plus of the film, he's not in it.
But yeah, he doesn't do his cameo.
Yeah.
And it's like for 2.5 hours, you're sitting there going, what's this film about?
Yes.
And in the last 30 minutes, he changes history, and it's like, that's a Tarantino
of
film.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
absolutely. And the last one, Parasite.
I have seen that. Excellent film. Worthy winner for Best Foreign. It's a shame. If it was in English, I reckon that would have took Best Film.
They're going to do a remake of it. What do you think of that?
Or a TV show they're going to make.
Is it a TV show?
It's a TV show.
Oh, okay. I saw a remake and I skipped that article by accident. I wanted to go back and read it. But yeah, so it's a TV show, not a film.
It's from what I understand, it's going to be a limited miniseries, mm-hmm, but based on, you know, the family.
Sure.
Okay. Is that a Netflix film?
No. Are we allowed to say brands? I do believe it's a Netflix project, yeah.
Right. Okay.
As in the miniseries?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Right. I thought that would be something that HBO would pick up.
I'm sure I read it's Netflix.
Netflix. Fair enough. Okay. So, final question, and then we'll move on to your project. Which do you think will take Best Picture?
Well, I would have said The Irishman until the Golden Globes the other day.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, Netflix, you know, Marriage Story wasn't mentioned, Two, mm-hmm, Popes wasn't mentioned, and it was like Irishman wasn't mentioned.
So. Two Popes has been mentioned for Best British Film.
it's a bit like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood getting Best Comedy. Musical.
Okay. Yeah.
I would say, for me, I would love to see Parasite, but it isn't going to happen because it's not in English. So I would have said probably 1917, because they want to make a statement.
I agree. I think the same thing, because it's a British film. It's technically a British film. It's got Sam Mendes. It's also nominated in Best British Film as well. So there is a potential that it will take Best British Film, and then they might go with Parasite. Well, they won't go with Parasite, because it's foreign film. They might go with Irishman and measure it out that way.
Definitely like to cover their bases, didn't they?
Of course.
They create all some extra categories just so everyone's a winner.
Of course. We could go into more stuff about BAFTA, but we won't, because you've got a film to promote. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
I'm David Campbell.
And here's Spotlight. So, just before we jump in to talk about 24 Hours in London, Diane Knight, trust me, you should be more front of scenes as well. She just tweeted to our message. We just put on our Instagram post a little video talking about 24 Hours in London, which is why we have the director, Paul Knight, in the studio with us. Welcome back, Paul.
Thank you very much.
So the second time you're with us, you're talking about your project. Tell us what 24 Hours in London is all about.
24 Hours in London is basically a discredited detective who's looking into the motives and reasoning behind a full 24 hours of killings mm-hmm. from someone who's just released from prison. So although it's 24 hours in London, it's actually... should be 48 hours in London. 24 is based...
But that messes up our top five favourites, let's not go there.
So the first day is the killer gets out and a day of killing, mm-hmm. and the second day is the day of the investigation of why and...
Looking back as to what happened,
The twists and turns come up in the story.
Okay. And this... there was... What drew me to this project, because I knew about this project way before it was made, was your goal to make it in a short period of time.
Yeah, I mean, I talked with many... indie filmmakers out there, and I love anyone who pushes forward no matter what they produce, but I was hearing a lot that people would crowdfund £30,000-£40,000 to make a short, and I could never understand that.
Of course.
So the real reason to set out was I teamed up with obviously Damian Morley and Danny Young, and I said to him, look, I want to show these young fellas what can be done for very little money, mm-hmm. But in 8 days, you shoot it quick, your little budget is actually worth more every day.
Absolutely.
And they said, yeah, what a great idea, but we'd also like a nice film, a decent film out of it as well.
Yeah, that's the problem, right?
Yeah. And obviously, that's what it was. That was my goal. It was more to show other people, forget looking for £1 million for your first film. Grab yourself 10, 20 grand. Don't make a short, make a feature.
And that's what it was. You're absolutely right, because that's one of the, what a lot of filmmakers, indie filmmakers especially, because when you go into the studio projects, that's where the budgets tend to balloon into the millions, right? Yeah. As soon as you get a big, like Paramount or Disney involved, there's no Marvel film that's going to be done under 1 million, right? Whichever actor they cast will be their salary. That'll be a catering budget. but you're right that you can actually make a decent indie project for the amount that you talked about. What the extra challenge was the fact that you then stepped up and said, we'll do it in 8 days. I understand, just as you've said, you know, the shorter amount of time, the cheaper the budget, obviously, but the logistics behind that, because it's you're not talking about a kitchen sink drama here. You're talking about a project where you had police involved, you had sort of multiple locations, you had action. There's one scene in particular. We David and myself had the opportunity to go and watch at the cast and crew premiere. Thank you very much for inviting us there. And there's one scene in particular where you have an entire... It's like a... like an assault on precinct 13 style attack on in a warehouse, right? And it's all of that, the logistics behind that alone would have taken 8 days for some other projects. What sort of was your mantra or your idea of how you're going to achieve that goal in 8 days?
I think it was wake up, have a Red Bull. No.
It's just
a bit of promotion there.
Some Red Bull and crack.
Yes, let's go more to crack than Red Bull. No, I mean, it was a case of I knew what I wanted to do. Obviously, poor Richard Oakes, who obviously was the DOP, mm-hmm. who makes it look fantastic. I think it was a bit too much for him.
Sure.
The actors, because obviously they're not in every scene every day, it was broke up. And as obviously when you came to the screening, we have Fiona Skinner.
Yes, yes. She played the... She played the police detective.
The detective,
right?
Yeah. So when you look at her, she is... For me, she is the hero of the film. She's the protagonist. Mm. But all her scenes, and she had like 48, 49 pages of dialogue.
Yeah.
Numerous scenes all in the police station. But she did it all in 2 days.
Okay, I can see that, but that's because hers was in one location.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, from a filming point of view, but if you sum up, when you break the film down, it's 44 minutes of an 82-minute film.
True.
So, I mean, it's half the film shot in 2 days. And we was only able to do that. Not just, I mean, I tip my hat to her to do now off book.
Of course.
So she came in and she knew every scene, and I could say, "Oh, we're not going to do that scene. We're going to do this." She knew it.
Did you have much rehearsal time?
We had no rehearsal time.
There you go.
But a lot of the obviously actors who were coming in doing an hour, I've done my scene. I'm off.
And Olivia.
I've got to admit, they were all amazing. And a lot of them were first takes, one take.
Speaking of some of the actors, and you said Fiona Skinner is the protagonist, is the lead in the movie.
From my perspective,
I was going to say Chris Johnson might disagree with
Chris,
you on that.
Well, yeah, Chris might. For me, Chris Johnson's character being the killer, even when I was first thinking it, I never saw him as the protagonist of the thing. I saw him as the thread.
Got it.
That sewed all the stories together.
Sure.
So for me, Fiona was always the protagonist, and Chris's character was the thread. You're right, but when you like say half the film is Fiona, but the other
it's seen through her perspective. The audience learns about what's going on through Fiona's eyes, so she's basically the audience's conduit to knowing what's going on. But it also starts. And we talked about Chris Johnson, Mark Bannerman as well is in it. Those of you who are EastEnders, age old EastEnders fan, I used to be a fan back in the day when he was on as well. The name escapes me.
Beppe.
Was it Beppe that he played?
No, he played Gianni.
He played Gianni, yes. So it's the Italian brothers. So he was in it. Lovely guy. Spoke to us at the premiere as well. So how did you manage to get all of these wonderful actors to say yes to do this experiment with you?
I guess we need to speed that up. Okay, so obviously...
It's okay, we've got time.
Mark Bannerman and Danny Midwinter,
yes.
Who obviously plays Skinner in the film, I've worked with, obviously.
Before. Are you on Landscape of Lies?
But because of how I championed that one out, if you like, champion, see what I did?
Nice,
that?
Yeah, we'll come to it, yeah. Right. Setting it up for later.
But Chris Johnson, when I was doing it, he, for whatever reason, wanted to work with us. I mean, you know, God bless him. And he just done a film called Black Sight, which if you watch Black Sight by Tom Paddon.
Tom B.S.
It's Chris, and it's all dialogue. The guy talks two-thirds of the film, mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So when I said, you don't really talk in this film, he was like, perfect.
Yeah, it's good.
You know what I mean? Because I just stood in one spot and done a load of dialogue. Now I get to run around and not say nothing.
He said,
so love it. I won in. People like Neil Ward. Mm-hmm. I'm friends with Neil, so you know it was.
So it was easy to just drag him in.
It was easy to. I mean, the biggest sell was we had a few people. Move away from the film. Go buy the film. but for the filmmakers, we was reaching out and we was putting up castings and postings, and we was getting some fantastic responses from some actors that I would have thought, now why would they ever bother with?
Of course.
Someone like me, we're many steps down. And they was like, no, love what you're doing. But as soon as you talk to the agent and you went, yeah, it's 8 days, so we only need your client for two.
And
it's
like, we're paying your client this month.
Well, the money...
You didn't even mention the money.
Yeah, it was fluctuating. They applied for... So we'd already said what that day rate was. So the fact that they applied, great. But it's when you turn around and go 8 days and they go, well, that's not a real film. You're making a short. So, no, we're making a feature. Well, you only want my client for 2 days. And it's like, well, even if I took 18 days to make the film, that role would still only take 2 days.
Of course.
So it wasn't the actors, it was the agents that kind of went, oh, no, we'll take a guy out of the running. Mm. And it was like...
See, I would like to dive into the conversation about how agents affect the casting process. But I will leave that for another day, where we can get one of the family of the show, Ikki Elamriti. She's an agent with IAG. She'll come in. She'll give us that particular aspect. But what I do want to move on to, because you've talked about how it was to get those people to come in and do that particular project. The next project that you're working on is what?
Well, the industry line is I have several projects in various stages of development.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key thing that you're told to tell everyone.
Oh, that's lovely.
When you're an actor or a filmmaker. There's two passion bits. One's a passion project of mine, mm-hmm. and one's a passion project of a friend of mine called Alex, which is Champion.
Champion.
That has been many years in the making. But realistically, because this is the film industry, it's more of a commercial film. So something in the vein of Git Carter meets Logan.
Oh, nice, nice comparison.
Yeah, which we have a production meeting on Tuesday to discuss.
To discuss.
And I would be able to tell you more after Tuesday.
Well, we hope that you can come back later on with Andrew.
Alex,
and come back on the show when that has grown some legs and has moved forward in the process, and get more. However, you came to talk about 24 Hours in London. We used to originally, when you came on the show the first time, it was called 24 Little Hours. Is there a reason why the name changed?
It was the UK distributor. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they went, 24 Little Hours doesn't make no sense. We'll call it 24 Hours in London, which I personally didn't like, sure, but I'm not the distributor, whatever. But of course, there was another film 20 years ago called 24 Hours in London, which was also a crime gangster action flick.
And has no connection to
this. Has no connection to mine, but got absolutely panned by the critics. So now when you Google 24 Hours in London, obviously that's the film that comes up. So they would read that and go, why would I buy that? Not clicking it was 20 years old. Uh-huh. Where obviously in America, the rest of the world, they understood obviously the hard work that Diane put in from our social media. And they went, no, that makes sense. We called it 24 Little Hours.
You see, this is why, Diane, this is the reason why you should be here as well talking about it. Because your hard work selling 24 Little Hours, that makes more sense.
And of course, the theme tune that was purposely written by Paul Tucker, sung by LJ Howard. It's called 24 Little Hours.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah. And it ties in because it reminds you, it sort of, you've got that song playing. In my head, every time I hear 24 Little Hours, I hear the jazz tune 24 Little Hours, right?
Which is why the catchphrase was, what a difference a day makes.
Yes, you know, right. And the juxtaposition.
Us old people.
The juxtaposition of having that very melodic love song, right, against this very vicious, angry, violent movie also works as well. So that's like a selling point in itself.
I've got a question. I mean, you said that it was down to the UK distributor wanting to change.
Yeah.
Have they got that much power to actually turn around and say, you have to change the name?
Yeah, well, you'll give it to them. You're leasing it to them to sell to the public. So if they feel this is going to sell better. So they changed the poster. They changed everything. They're meant to be the experts. So if they feel that's how you sell the film to the British public, then I guess that's what you go with.
It's funny because I was looking it up as well, because I knew you were coming back, and I typed in 24 Little Hours, and it came up, the poster, and everything comes up, and now you're turning around and saying to me it's 24 Hours in London. It just didn't compute with me as well.
It doesn't make no sense, and... Mm. But what can you do?
But either way, you're looking, when you go to on Monday, because it's coming out on Monday, you can go and buy it from your local supermarkets. Can you get it on Sky? Sky Plus?
It will be on Sky, Sky Store.
Sky Store, that's it.
Yes, Amazon.
iTunes.
I don't know, okay, to be fair. But it is in HMV, it is in all the supermarkets.
BritBox.
I believe London Live is actually bidding for it at the moment.
Nice.
For the TV. So, okay.
Have you been on London Live yet?
I haven't been on London Live. I'm not famous enough for London Live.
Of course you
I'm
are.
I'm famous enough for Shoot the Breeze. Yeah.
You know, this is a get. The reason we got you as our pilot, well, not pilot, but like our premiere episode of season 7, which is what we're calling this. I call it season 7. Everyone is like, you've only been on 3 years. Like, yes, sure. But that's why we wanted to get you on this premiere episode so that you can come and talk about 24 Hours in London. That's what you see when you go in to Tesco, or you can go on Amazon and have a look at it. It's coming out on Monday. The podcast episode will come out on Monday as well, so we'll be pushing it as much as possible to get... go buy it, send us a message, tell us what you think. I watched it, I loved it, it was great. And I'm not just saying that because you're here.
But you say that, so obviously I'm always grateful when people come along to watch something. But based on that screening,
yes,
while you was all sitting there, I was actually at the back of the theatre making notes when people were laughing, what they were laughing at, what did work, what didn't work. And it's actually been rejigged and re-edited.
Oh, really?
And the version that you've seen.
All right.
Based on, for that turnout, it was over like nearly 250 people at that screening. Fantastic turnout. So it was really nice, because I watch it and I watch it with Diane and it's like what we see. So I'm thinking, well, that's meant to be a gag.
And if you don't, if people don't laugh, then you're thinking, okay, it needs to be shifted. Maybe they didn't laugh because of something else, and you find out why.
It's not working, so it didn't work, and so it must be just me.
So in other words, we've got to go and watch it again.
So you've got to go watch it. Well, right, okay. You've got to buy it again. No. so you've got to watch it. But based on that, I did use it as a focus thing. Mm. And of course, the other thing is, when everyone was coming out and you stand there, everyone comes up to you and they go, oh, great film, great. And you think to yourself, no, I made it. I know it ain't that great. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? So afterwards, when everyone was mingling at the bar, I always stand in the shadows just out of earshot when people go, well, that was a load of rubbish or whatever, or what, I didn't understand this. And I make the notes and it's like, well, obviously I need to not be so subtle. I need to clank that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did afterwards. You kind of, you get all the criticism that they won't say to your face. And it's like, and the next day, it was all back up into the editing suite and I was free jigging.
Okay, so what would you have said to someone who turned around and said, well, I really liked it, but this scene didn't work, blah, blah, blah.
To
blah.
Be fair, I love it. Mm. I don't believe my work at this point
is excellent.
That is 100% perfect, okay. 10 out of 10 score on IMDb or whatever. I just don't believe it because it's like, no, I've got so much more to learn. So how can I get it right straight away?
But the thing is, even when you've been doing it for years or decades, I mean, you can still talk about Steven Spielberg or even you talk about Steve McQueen or Steve McQueen. We talk about Scorsese. They still do films that when they look at it, they have problems with it.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You might say it's fantastic, but there are still things that you can say, right, can be tweaked here and there and whatnot. Definitely, I will rewatch it. I'll be happy to give you my opinion. Okay. Now,
as long as it's constructive, I don't mind.
This is how I always give my feedback. I always give my feedback as positive, constructive, positive. That's always how I like to do it. And I'm you have far more experience than I do, but I'd be happy to give my own experience as well.
And I'll be ready for it.
You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus Iacco.
I'm David Campbell.
And with us in the studio is the film director, film writer, Paul Knight, who's promoting his film 24 Hours in London, which is coming out on Monday. We're about to do our top five favorites. So our top five favorites today is going to be focused on top five favorite films set in 24 hours. We're going to do, if you haven't listened to the show before, we go around the room. We start with our guest, who will say his number five and number four. We go around the room, back to him, where he then say his number one, and then we wrap up and we go home. So, Paul, what is your number five and four favorite film set in 24 hours?
When you brought this up, I looked at this and it was like, it's quite surprised just how many films are set in 24 hours.
Yeah, a lot.
So I would say, seeing as I get to kick off, for me, it should be High, but you might say it because I remember last time I came in with all these ideas and then you all said it when it wasn't my go. So I might have to go in reverse. So for number five for me is Long Good Friday.
Long Good Friday. That's Bob Hoskins,
Bob
right?
Hoskins, yeah. Helen Mirren. That's fantastic film, classic. That goes in. And then on number four, again, being old, I would say The Warriors.
The Warriors bounced on my list and then came right off.
Same here.
All right. So, David, what was your number five and four?
Like you said, there was a lot. And there were so many that I had to... Anyway, so for number five, there's two.
You didn't say you could do that.
Yeah, we said that to you last time.
We did.
Yes.
I would have changed it then. Okay. I'll save it. Sure,
okay.
I forget it.
Okay, so my number five.
Five.
My number five is two. High Noon and Alien. High Noon and Alien both share the same theme, which is build of tension right the way through. Yeah. High Noon is more or less shot in real time as well. And Alien... the tension on that one just builds and builds and builds until near enough the final. And it's the same with High Noon. So that's the reason why I couldn't separate them. Right, that's number five, joint number five, High Noon and Alien. Number four, satire. Again, a double. Doctor Strangelove and Airplane. And I really love Doctor Strangelove.
Yeah.
But Airplane is just classic.
Yeah.
It is just absolute classic. And I'm not going to go into... raptures about them too, but yeah.
Sure, absolutely. Good choices all around so far. Just before I go into mine, Jimmy Noble sent in his top five. Oh, well, he said top five. He gave us four. Before Sunrise, he said he was going to do the trilogy before Sunrise, Sunset, whatever. But he went Before Sunrise, Clerks, Do the Right Thing, and Breakfast Club. He was going to put Reservoir Dogs in there, but it didn't count because it has a lot of flashbacks. Which different segments. So thanks, Jimmy Noble, for sending yours. My number five is 12 Angry Men, the 1957 version with Henry Fonda. Great film set in just this court case, and it's the jury deliberating, and they spend a very horrible how many hours in this room, and one person overturns what 11 people are thinking. Great film. My number four. Doubleheader. I've got Clerks and Friday. Clerks, Kevin Smith. Friday, Ice Cube film with Chris Tucker. And one of the reasons why I put the two together, comedy, obviously both of them comedy. And also, I watched both of them on the same day. So it was like, watched both of them. And it's
the
great
fact that you watch them in 24 hours isn't the same as it being 24 hours.
Isn't it? I kind of put the tie together. You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
I'm David Campbell.
And with us in the studio, the filmmaker Paul Knight is going to tell us his number three and number two favorite film set in 24 hours.
Okay. Right. Well, now I see how you play the game.
No. You saw from last time.
So number three, he got reminded. So number three is a double header.
Absolutely. Go for it.
So for me, it's Hitchcock, Rope, and Rearview Window. That's a double. Yeah,
is Rearview Window set in 24 hours?
Yes, because obviously it starts that the young lady comes over and he's already broken his leg.
Yes.
But it is a full 24
hours. Sure. Okay.
It's funny because I had Rope on my list and it just got edged out.
It's funny because I've got the list and I was thinking, I won't do with more than five, just in case, because I know you boys.
There's so many rules.
I want to say, but if you're going to say it, it's like, I don't want to double up. So the other thing for me would be Run, Lola, Run.
Okay, so that was your number two, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that so was, Run.
No, that's number.
So also three.
Oh, no, it's number two. Three and so number two. It was a double header on three, and that's number two.
Right. Okay.
Run, Lola, Run. David, what's your number three and two?
My number three is Do the Right Thing, Spike Lee.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's been mentioned. Now you've got to come up with
Do you want to come up with another one that's mentioned?
No, it hasn't been mentioned.
I'll be honest. A lot of the ones that you're going to mention have been mentioned. And the ones I haven't mentioned have been mentioned.
But Do the Right Thing, brilliant film, starring Spike Lee, Danny Aiello.
Who died recently.
Recently passed along. And Samuel L. Jackson's in one of his early roles.
Yes,
and
he's the DJ, right?
Yeah, and a very, very tight film as well. And a very good example of a writer, director, actor actually doing a really decent job in all three roles.
Yes. Just a conversation that David and I had just before we came on. We're talking about
Quentin Tarantino,
right? Yeah. So he's great as a writer, great as a director. Whenever he steps into his own projects, it's always terrible. His acting is always terrible. When he's in other people's projects like Dusk Till Dawn, he's great. Being directed by somebody else, but then putting all three together, and then I was like, yeah, I'm trying to do that, and that's a problem. But then you brought up the very good point that Spike Lee has done that, and obviously he's black and I'm half black, so I take that as a moving on.
I'll take credit for that one.
Okay. I will, yes. My number three. Oh, sorry.
That was my number three.
That was your number three. Do the Right Thing. I apologize. You're trying to push me along.
I'm looking at the time and I think, okay, we've got
plenty of time, so we can slow the pace down.
So I'm slowing the pace now. Number two, Run, Lola, Run. I'm actually really glad that you agree with me on that, because that is a really, really good underseen film. And the reason being, it's German film, so it's in German language, and it's 1998, so they're still talking about Deutschmarks, which is gone now.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I think in the 90s, it was pretty big in the 90s, but just dropped off the face of the earth, right?
Yeah. Which obviously inspired Sliding Doors.
Yes.
It was Run, Lola, Run.
It wouldn't surprise me because I looked at that film and I haven't seen Sliding Doors. I don't know what put me off it.
But Gwyneth Paltrow.
But I think it was the fact that the concept was something I'd already seen.
Yeah.
And I think that was the reason why I didn't bother watching it, if you see what I mean. And Run, Lola, Run is such a really good concept. Mm-hmm. and really well done as well, that I didn't need to watch Sliding Doors.
No, I agree.
Stick with the original song, yeah.
Definitely.
Long Rule Run. Anyway, I won't talk about it just yet. So that is your number two, correct?
That was my number two.
All right. So my number three is Die Hard. And I was going to put the Die Hard trilogy, but I just went Die Hard. No, and I say trilogy because I don't care what happened after three.
No one does.
I don't care what happens after number one.
I like number two as well.
My personal favorite is three. I mean, come on, Samuel L. Jackson comes in, right? It's like, yeah. But Die Hard, I mean, it's obviously set on one evening, right? It's a fantastic movie. Who hasn't seen Die Hard? It's great. My number two, and this is not me writing anything, is Lola Run. It's like it's the hat trick. It's like all three of us
I'm really glad about that, actually, yeah. Because, you know, if we three can just independently come up and say, you know what, this film, which is not English,
yes,
and in a different language, is that good to come up at that high on our individual list?
Yep.
I think everyone else should be sort of like taking note, you know?
No, you're right. I don't think it's been talked about. And that's the, it's just thinking about it. I remember it when I saw it. Mm. I saw it back in the early 2000s, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. And it was pretty big. It's like, and the reason I saw it was because I heard a lot of people talk about, oh, you should go and check out Run, Lola, Run. It's great. Especially Famke Potente?
Potente.
Just after that, she did Born Identity. Right?
Yeah, she was the girlfriend, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of people were like, oh, you like Born Identity, you definitely go and see this. So I was like, oh, I'm going to check out what all the big deal is about. Went and checked it out, blew my mind. It's like from the first rewind, and I'm not going to go into more about that, but you go and check it out and you understand what I mean. I was like, yes, I'm in. Yes, sold. But then 5-10 years after that, nobody's talking about it. Mm. It's like, you know, it's
just, now.
Until no, now, yes. Until now, so, yeah, yes. The hat trick, all of us putting as number
exactly. And number two,
yeah.
Number two.
You're listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Marcus E. Acko.
I'm David Campbell.
We have with us in the studio the director, filmmaker, Paul Knight from London Knights, who's promoting his film 24 Hours in London, which is coming out on Monday in all avenues, except maybe iTunes, that you can go and watch, get it. He's about to tell us his number one favorite film set in 24 hours that is not 24 hours in London.
Right. You're throwing me now. So my last one...
Was it because you had 24 hours in London?
No, it wasn't. Because my last one is now going to have to be a triple header.
Go for it.
Because I wanted to mention Buried.
Ryan Reynolds,
the coffin. I just think that's fantastic.
Do you want to put that in there or do you want to do it as an honourable mention?
I'll do that as an honourable mention. Right. Then I've got 2DLK, which was one of the films that got me interested in filmmaking.
2DLK?
Yeah, it's about two Japanese actresses. One's young from the farming village, come to the big city, and one's a bit more jaded, who's, shall we say, slept away to a top. Okay. And it's all set within the one night, as they all wait for the call, which one of them's got the big movie job the next morning.
Yeah.
And then they end up killing him.
Spoilers.
It's a one location. Well, it's an old film now.
Sure.
It's a one location film that was done by an indie thing, shot in real time, and it was, again, one of those films that should inspire filmmakers. This is what you can do in 2 days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's fantastic.
And it's called 2DLK.
Okay. It stands for two downstairs living room kitchen.
Oh, got it.
So, but just to be controversial, Back to the Future.
Oh.
Starts on the same day, ends on the same day.
You know what?
That's a good one.
You know what I mean?
That is a good one. That is a good one.
Okay.
I can see as you threw me at the beginning. I thought I'd just end on that one.
All right. Oh, so are you going with three or just?
One's honourable, one was inspiring, and one's controversial. What you want to do?
No, I'll keep it on there. I will keep it on there. I'm writing it down because technically, it does meet the. It's set in one day because the fact that he goes back in time
to
he comes back and he lands back in the same day. Okay, you know what? I'll give you that one, David. What's your number one?
You've already mentioned that, actually. 12 Angry Men.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any honourable mentions?
honourable mentions. The reason why I chose it is because it shows the power of one person to influence change.
Sure.
And it also shows the machinations that happen when you have 12 different people trying to come to a consensus mm-hmm. and their personal experiences
influencing their
decisions. It's really, really, really inspiring stuff in some ways as well. You just one person can actually bring about such a big change.
Yeah.
It's a pity that the world is at the moment doesn't have that one person.
No,
you know, we need that one person, but there aren't.
Sure. I would mention, but we've been told numerous times that this isn't a political show, so I'm just going to keep
I wasn't saying anything about the politics, I'm just saying the world.
Okay. But it also helped that there was a young Jewish lad who knew how to use a switch knife. If he hadn't come along saying, that's not how you use a knife, it could have thrown it off. So,
But then again, that's all about the personal experiences.
Yes.
And taking on board everything from sort of like everyone around you, including different cultures.
Yes.
To come to a really good decision, yeah.
I know it started off, if it didn't, if I'm mixing this up with something else, then I do that all the time. It started off as a theatrical piece.
Yes, that's right.
And then it became a film. And if there anyone who wants to set, any actors especially, who want to set up a very simple theatrical piece that shows their acting talents, that's what you need to do. Mm. If you can take that, put that on stage, because all you literally need is one table and 12 chairs and you're good to go. That you just go in there, get 12 actors, it doesn't have to be 12 men, although it says 12 angry men.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be. They've done other versions which had mixed genders and whatnot. You can do that these days where you can have mixed, not just gender. You don't have to stick with the binary gender. You can mix it up as much as you want because it still is there. It's about the prejudices. You talked about the different type of prejudices about the person that they're deliberating on. You could use that as a theatrical piece right now and it works. Anyway, 12 Angry Men, I mentioned it. My honorable mentions, I was going to put Panic Room in there, Jodie Foster and Kristen Stewart. That movie is amazing. Dave Fincher. I was going to put Dust Till Dawn. I mentioned it earlier. I was going to mention Rope as well, but it kind of got edged off by something that you mentioned, David, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb. Stanley Kubrick. That movie is just fantastic. If you're put off by movies that are in black and white, which I know people who are, who say, no, I'm not going to watch it, it's black and white. Trust me, get over yourself. Go and watch that movie because it is intelligent. It is funny. It is wacky. It is just great.
It's still relevant as
exactly. well. Exactly. That's what I was going to say. It is still relevant today, even though it was shot in whenever it was shot.
64.
Yeah. And Peter Sellers, amazing, plays three different characters in that movie. He was going to play four. Little trivia. He was going to play four, but I think he either hurt himself or he broke his leg or something like that.
There were two things. He didn't want to do the fourth one.
Yeah.
And he started to learn the lines for the general he was supposed
no,
to
No, it wasn't the general. It was the guy who...
The Texan accent.
Yeah, he was the guy who rides the bomb at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, he was supposed to... he was starting to learn that and then he twisted his ankle.
Yeah, okay.
And he didn't want to do it anyway.
Yeah, he still would have nailed it because, I mean, the three characters that he plays alone, he plays the American president, he plays Dr. Strangelove, and he plays a British major or something like that. Three completely different characters, but they are all fantastic. Watch it just for that alone. Anyway, that's Dr. Strangelove. You've been listening to Shoot the Breeze on Resonance 104.4 FM. Paul, I want to thank you again very much for coming in.
Thank you for having me on.
This is the second time you've been on the show. We welcome you back anytime you're in London and you want to come in. And just even if you just want to come sit and talk, feel free to come in. Let me know. We will have guests. You can sit there.
I'll be happy to come along when you want to get political.
Yeah.
About casting and BAFTA.
Absolutely.
I would quite look forward to joining that discussion.
Well, casting is something that I'm quite intrigued by. It's an interesting one because I'm the one person in this room out of the three of us who has very little knowledge of the film process totally. So when you turn around and say to me that a short is like £10,000,
you could, yeah. Well, if a good short would be
doing,
unless you come to me, in which case it's a feature film.
You know, I was like, oh, okay. You know, that was news to me, but I kept my mouth shut.
You know, David and I will sit down and we'll organize that. We'll get you to come in, and I'll see if I can get Ikki El-Amrity. Hi, Ikki. Merry Christmas. Merry New Year.
Yeah, Merry New Year.
To come in, and we'll get this this conversation, because you know me, I'll have a rant at anything that I want to have a rant, right? So this would be something we'll get you. Merry New Year!
Yes, okay.
It's Happy New Year.
Yeah, it's Happy New Year. Yes, I'm thinking of that film. What's his name? And he got nominated as well.
Which one?
Dolomite.
Yes. That's it. It's Eddie Murphy from Trading Places.
Yes.
So we said at the beginning, if you hadn't messaged us and said, we know it's Eddie Murphy from Trading Places. Nobody has checked me on that. Every time I keep saying it, nobody has gone, Happy New Year. I've been waiting, but no one's done that. Anyway, so Paul, thank you very much for coming in. Your film, 24 Hours in London, is coming out on Monday, the same time this podcast drops. So go get it. Tell us what you think. I've been Marcus E. Acko.
I'm David Campbell.
Saying thank you for listening.
And see you next week.
You got it this time.
No,
it's the new year. David's like, yes, I'm producer David, not producer Dave.
Yeah, right.
Have you got our outro playing? Because I haven't got, I can hear it now.
Okay.
The music's playing in my head anyway.
A day made, 24 little hours. What the sun and the flowers, where there used to be rain. My yesterday was blue, dear. Today I'm a part of you, dear. My lonely nights are through, dear. Since you said you were mine, a day makes. There's a rainbow before me. Skies above can't be stormy. Since that moment of bliss, that thrilling kiss, your menu. What a difference a day made, and the difference is you.
I'm Pat Fraley, and those were a few of the characters I carry around in my hip pocket.
This is the radio station you need to be listening to, lad.
Between exercises, I'll slip in critical information.
104.4 FM, radio station Residence FM.
And other feats of insanity and joy.
Radio. And radio is a very powerful medium. Yes, because right now, all I'm doing is letting myself totally go. I don't care about you. I don't want to please you. I don't want to be something special. All I want to be is in that total feeling. Just be totally into it. And even if you think it's ridiculous, that's your problem. I enjoy tremendously Resonance Radio. Resonance Radio. Radio Place.